I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is TechCentral's Meet the CIO, the technology show where we talk to people who lead technology in business. Now, Meet the CIO is proudly brought to you by Wipro. We thank the team at Wipro for helping bring you these great interviews. And you can learn more about Wipro at wipro.com. Now, our guest today on Meet the CIO is a senior leader in enterprise cybersecurity, until recently Group CISO, or Chief Information Security Officer at Vodacom, where she worked between 2021 and 2024. She was also previously Group CISO at Old Mutual. She is also president of an organization called Women in Cybersecurity, and for the last few months has been serving as Chief Cybersecurity Advisor for Africa at Microsoft. Carissa Varma, welcome to the show and thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Pleasure. Now, we all know that IT is a fairly male-dominated industry, and cybersecurity, I think, is even more so. How did you become a senior leader in such a male-dominated field, and did you set out to build a career in security?
So the short story is I actually thought I would go into medicine.
Okay.
Realized I didn't like touching sick people, so figured sick computers would be better.
Viruses of a different kind.
But the real story behind it is I did computer science in school. I was one of the first sort of groups of kids to do computer science in South Africa. And back then, I think the bug just bit. I never looked back. It's changed the trajectory of my career.
Interesting. Okay. So I'm probably going to give your age away here, but what computers did you learn?
Back then I was still doing Turbo Pascal development. Okay. I mean, it's like really, really old stuff.
Okay. I also learned Turbo Pascal.
Oh, there we go. So both our ages given away then, Duncan.
I think Pascal was actually a great grounding in programming. What do they use now? Python?
Yeah, Python's pretty, I think Java's still also a bit popular.
Java's still a big thing in schools. Yeah. Okay, interesting. All right. Carissa, tell me a bit about your background. How did you eventually come to be the head of or the advisor on cybersecurity for Africa at Microsoft? What was the career path that brought you to this point?
So interestingly enough, I'll start with that decision to do computer science back in school. Mm. My mom at the time bought a good computer, but now we'd probably laugh at the standards. But she bought a computer for me while I was studying computer science at school, and I just got fascinated with everything to do about tech. And in my community at that time, there wasn't really anyone studying tech, so there was no one I could speak to about what does a technology career look like, what does IT look like. But I was really fascinated by computers, and I think that's when I really started to learn more and just became really inquisitive about it. Fast forward to going into university, and I got, like I said, I had to choose between medicine and computer science. And I got a bursary to study in Malaysia. So I went across to Malaysia for 4 years. At that point in time, the degrees in South Africa were not as specialized as the degrees in Malaysia. And I did a four-year honors degree in software engineering. Came out thinking I was going to be a software engineer, thinking I was going to write code every day. And coming back into South Africa and getting interviewed after the bursary process, the head of cybersecurity said, no, you're a cyber practitioner. You're coming to me. Okay. At that point in time, it wasn't called cybersecurity. It was called IT security back then. And he's like, no, I can see in you. There's something that's meant to be in IT security. And that kind of was where my career started in cybersecurity. I've done every possible role there is to do in cybersecurity, from deeply technical. I've been the person configuring firewalls, implementing antivirus, all the way through to senior leadership, 21 years.
What was your first job?
My first job was configuring firewalls and antivirus. That was my first job.
Okay.
I didn't do a good job of it, let me tell you. I did you take a graduate straight out of school and put them in front of some big telecommunication equipment. There was a couple of challenges there.
I suppose that what you were doing then would look very different today.
Completely different.
Back then, the internet was still fairly young.
Exactly.
Cyber crime was probably not nearly the issue it is today.
Exactly. And I think the attack surface was completely different. I mean, everyone was on premise at that point in time. So having firewalls and having antivirus was enough.
Mm.
when you're going into, you know, cloud and AI and all of these things that are happening today, the attack surface is fundamentally different. So just having antivirus and firewalls not enough anymore.
Well, take me through your career as you worked through Old Mutual, became Group CISO at Old Mutual, and then joining Vodacom. Take us through that career and what some of the highlights were.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I was a Group CISO at Old Mutual at a time when the world had just gone into COVID. So I started the role probably about a year before COVID happened. And I was accountable for both security and resilience at the time. And you can imagine that both of those were playing in opposing forces with getting people safe, but also making sure the attackers weren't trying to attack you. And so it was a very challenging introduction into my first CISO role. When the entire world around me was changing. But I think, you know, amazing learning opportunity. Both Old Mutual and Vodacom are such amazing companies to work for. I think from a cyber perspective, there's very few jobs where you can feel the benefit to society, the benefit to people. And that's what I love about cybersecurity, right? Every day I do something that keeps people safe. There's not many jobs that you can say that about in technology. And both organizations have a very good ethos around, you know, servicing people, protecting people. And that resonated very well with my own personal aspirations to protect people. Also, I mean, across both Old Mutual and Vodacom, I worked across 13 African countries in Old Mutual, 8 African countries in Vodacom. So vast teams across lots of geographies. And I love working in Africa. It's, you know, it's in my DNA to want to do more for Africa. And so I love the cultural diversity. I love working with this amazing team across the continent that we're doing fundamentally game-changing things, which, was very inspirational. And, I look back at it with fond memory, actually.
As an outsider, never having worked in this sort of role at all as a journalist, I'd imagine that being a CISO is a highly stressful job. I imagine that you're kept up at wake worrying about who is trying to get into your organization, attack it, and bring it down. Is it really high stress?
I'm not going to say it's the easiest job in the world. I think it's probably being a CISO asks you to wear so many different hats. You go from, you know, deep in an incident where you need to understand the technicalities of what's going on in the organization, what the attacker's doing, all the way to speaking to a board. And that range of an ability to be able to navigate different stakeholders, to be able to communicate with different groups of people, is very critical in the role. And it sometimes is the make or break of what a good CISO is. If you are able to, you know, have a board level conversation and communicate a message in a way that's non-technical, but that people can grasp the severity or understand the importance, but equally get into an incident room and be able to navigate deeply technical teams and be able to orchestrate the way forward in an incident. And I think that that perspective and that scale and that sort of vast breadth of stakeholders to navigate makes the role quite challenging. I will say that I think across the globe, actually, I think cybersecurity is becoming more topical. And so more people are asking questions. And as more people start asking questions, people start understanding it better. And that does make the CISO's job a little bit easier, because once people around you start understanding cybersecurity, wanting to know more about it, you typically get more sponsorship, you get more buy-in. And that's the big change in organizations, culturally being able to change an organization. Because cybersecurity doesn't happen only in the cyber team. It happens across every aspect, in an acquisition, in a merger, in a, you know, when you're buying new technology, when you're starting a new business process. All of those things could impact your cyber posture. So having everyone in the organization work towards a cyber agenda is really important. And I think that that curiosity around cybersecurity is helping CISOs.
You're talking about very different skill sets here that I think many people who are appointed to these roles might struggle with. I mean, you've got to have deeply technical skills, but you also have to have those people skills, those soft skills, the ability to engage with a CIO and impress upon him or her the importance of what you're doing. Do you find that CISOs struggle with that a bit? Do you find that their engagements with boards are something they tend to fear?
So I think there's a growing demand for CISOs to take on more. What we're seeing across Africa is the CISO role is actually morphing. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of CISOs which are called strategic CISOs that are taking on things like privacy. They're taking on business resilience. They're taking on IT risk. So the business is asking more of CISOs today than they ever have. Additionally, the attack surface is increasing. Like I spoke, people mm-hmm. are going into cloud. We're doing new types of business functions. Business models are changing. We have telcos going into financial services going into telcos. And so the business method is changing. Mm-hmm. And so that makes it quite a complex discussion at board at Exco to very simply explain what risk is. Because typically, cybersecurity risk isn't something that you can invest in today and expect that the risk goes away. I'll give you a very practical example. I spoke about, I was configuring firewalls and antivirus when I first started. Had we stopped there, had technology evolution with regards to cybersecurity stopped at antivirus, we would have had an endless amount of threats that we couldn't face today. So the discussion at boards and Excos is really around how do you continuously invest? Mm-hmm. And I think CISOs are having challenges with that because organizations are strapped from a cash perspective. And here's a risk that you will need to continuously invest in to be able to stay ahead of. And that balance of where do I put that investment? Where's the biggest bang for my buck? How do I show value of that investment and once again go back in and say the next iteration of what I ask is here? And I think that's the conversations that a lot of CISOs are struggling with.
I know it might be different across organizations, but generally speaking, how should the role of the CISO be structured within the organizations? Should the CISO be reporting into the board, into the CEO, into the CIO? What's your take on that?
So for me, I've had different reporting lines across my career. And for me, it's never been about the reporting line. It's more about the access to the individuals and the decision makers. So I think what's really critical is that the CISO has enough airtime with the Exco and the board to be able to explain risk properly. But the CISO needs to earn that, right? Mm. You need to be able to speak the board's language. You need to be able to speak the Exco's language. And that takes skills, and you have to build those skills. So I think that for me, reporting lines aren't that critical, the ability to influence, because your influence, once again, is to sit across the organization. If you choose sitting in a risk team, you may have more difficulty influencing into technology. If you choose sitting in a technology team, you may have more difficulty influencing into risk. Mm. So I think there's always a trade-off. And I've seen great CISOs sitting in different parts of the organization that do really well because their aspiration is more about cross-organization influence and influence into the board. And they don't let reporting lines sort of hinder that. But also, we've seen a big move in South Africa from CISOs reporting into historically a risk structure to more of a CIO-type structure. A lot more organizations are now standardizing on a CIO reporting model for CISOs.
Do you think that's the right approach?
Like I said, I think I've reported into CIOs and CTOs, and I've not had an issue influencing into the organization. So mm-hmm. I think it takes both the personality skills as well as the reporting line to make make influence into an organization.
Okay. Now, we see the scary headlines almost every day now, and there seems to be a marked increase in attacks on South African organizations in the last few years. Particularly, it seems, driven by ransomware gangs from abroad. How serious is the situation? What's actually going on the ground? And how do we fight back against this as a country?
Yeah. So, I've been speaking to a lot of people recently. Ransomware is almost like the boogeyman of cybersecurity, right? You speak about ransomware and everyone kind of freezes up and go, oh, my goodness, the world is going to fall apart. And I've got a very different take on this. If I think about ransomware a few years ago, we were really ill-equipped to manage ransomware. But technology has evolved to a point where we've actually gotten a lot better at managing ransomware. So I'll give you a practical example. Across Microsoft customers, we've seen a 3x drop in active encryption to be able to exploit customer revenue or steal data. Now, if you think about the purpose of ransomware, attackers are trying to either encrypt your data or to be able to steal your data and hold you ransom. Mm-hmm. And if you can disrupt that chain, then you disrupt the revenue that attackers are getting. Now, we're seeing the 3x drop because technology has actually evolved to a point where we can identify encryption, we can identify the attack path into the organization and stop the attacker before the encryption happens.
Automatically.
Automatically with technology. But now, there's a double, like I said, the world keeps moving on, right? So you manage one area, but then attackers go to something else. So what we've also seen is that 92% of successful attacks where encryption actually happens, where the attacker successfully gains access to that system and is able to hold you ransom, happens with unmanaged devices. Now, these are devices typically where you have contractors coming in, you've got third parties coming in, you don't particularly have your own security technology on those devices, and attackers will go where the weakest inroad is, right? So they know that perhaps our third parties and our ecosystem is weaker than the controls we've put in place in big corporate, and so they go there. We've also seen that there's been a 2.75 increase in the last year over human-operated ransomware. And what human-operated ransomware is, it's very different to traditional ransomware. Traditional ransomware, you put a piece of code out there, mm-hmm. and you try and get that code to get into as many things and to attack as many things and to encrypt as many things as possible. Human-operated ransomware, there's a person behind that. Mm-hmm. And that person can use logic and judgment as to where to move next and what to do. And that's harder to pick up with technology. Mm-hmm. So once again, the evolution. Standard ransomware, I think technology can manage well. We're now seeing an evolution to look at third-party devices, non-managed devices, as well as human-operated ransomware. And that's the next iteration. And that's the area that, you know, companies should really be focused on trying to figure out how they manage.
Is AI going to play an important role in fighting off those human-managed ransomware attacks? What role do you see AI playing in cybersecurity in the next few years?
So I think you can look at AI and cybersecurity from two perspectives. And I think CISOs are typically looking at it from two perspectives. There's a risk angle. So AI will bring in risk. Attackers are using AI today. So we're seeing attacks driven with AI. We've often seen things like AI being used to scour the internet and gather data. It's a very effective tool to be able to do that. So reconnaissance, which is the initial part of an attack that an attacker perpetrates, happens a lot faster now, because attackers can use AI to do reconnaissance on their behalf and really get a lot more intelligence. So we are seeing AI-powered attacks. So attackers are starting to use it. And it's almost like you could see the time that we're living in as an AI arms race between cyber defenders and cyber attackers. Mm-hmm. And whoever is going to adopt and utilize first is probably going to get the upper hand. And there's a couple of things that I say to people around AI and cybersecurity, and the conversation around risk really centers on data. How do you protect your data when you're using AI? And if you think about AI, there's three ways that you can give data to AI. The first one is you can actually, when you're writing a prompt or writing something into your AI system, copy and paste the data in. So this is typically like putting in an email and saying, summarize the email for me, or putting in a document and saying, summarize the document for me. So you're giving the AI the data, so you've got control over the data. The second way AI can get access to your data is by existing access within your organization. So let's say, for example, you've got a SharePoint site. People in your organization have access to data on that SharePoint site. The AI picks up on that data that you already have and exploits that data that you already have to gain access to information within the organization. So the original controls that we've always been talking about around data leakage prevention, about information classification, those standard controls still apply, and they will still protect against AI access to data, which is that second component of how AI could get access to data. The third component on how AI can get access to data is is where you write an actual model that is trained on your organizational data. So you write an AI model that says, use my data and actually give me some intelligence. Now, that model actually needs to be protected, because if that model is used, all of the data that you've trained that model on is then accessible. So using a really good framework for how that model is built, secured, that normal secure development life cycle, really, mm-hmm. really critical. And I often say to people, AI is not magic. You can actually secure AI. You can put controls around it. It is a piece of technology that you can actually, like any other piece of technology, utilize and secure. But we're also seeing on the other side, so that's the risk element of AI and cybersecurity. We're also seeing on the other side, we're seeing that defenders, cyber defenders, and my personal view is that I believe AI is going to start tipping the scales towards cyber defenders. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, think about a CISO protecting an organization. You need to protect every single entry point into that organization. An attacker just needs to find one entry point into the organization to be able to compromise it. Hugely difficult role. But if you think about how you become more proactive, it's getting insight into all the data, all the business processes, all the changes that are happening in your organization. AI is great at doing that, going to go find the data, analyze it, pick up trends that you can't necessarily see. And so I think by applying AI, defenders are going to start getting an advantage because we know our organizations better. Attackers have to work to gain access to the data within our organizations, and we have that at our fingertips. So we can use AI to almost surface that data, surface those trends, and become more proactive and close down things before attackers can get to us. What we're seeing in customers is a 30% increase of speed to close down cyber incidents. So that's actually using AI is making us faster in containing incidents. And we're seeing 17% of incidents, a reduction in incidents. Mm-hmm. So we're actually preventing incidents as well using AI. So I think it's a double-edged sword, and CISOs have to think about it, and CIOs have to think about it from both perspectives, managing the risk as well as exploiting it to get value in your cyber team.
Mm. Where do you think it's going, though, in the next few years? Are companies going to deploy AI agents that automatically fend off and fight off cyber attackers, and are cyber attackers going to use AI agents of their own to try and penetrate systems? Are we going to end up in a few years from now where you've got AI software fighting other AI software and a lot of it's just left to run in the background?
So I definitely think AI agents are going to transform how attackers, the scale at which attackers can attack, as well as the scale at which defenders can defend. But I believe we're always going to need humans. And this is because AI is really great at picking up things and identifying patterns, but cyber expertise is absolutely critical to be applied on top of that. And give you a practical example. AI today can tell you, here's the five options to contain an incident. But really understanding the organizational context, something like time of day, of when you contain a system, what that system contains, who the business process owners are, that needs human intuition and human logic. And I think that we will always have a degree of human skills on top of AI. I don't think we'll have, you know, it will probably become like this, you know, where phishing is now, where you have a lot of automated phishing attacks. Yes. But the really sophisticated attacks go in with like the human-operated ransomware, right, where you have a human behind it. Mm. I think that's where AI will eventually go. We will have the humans very behind the very targeted, very sophisticated, because it's always going to take human skill.
Okay, so behind the scenes, the attackers, the most advanced attacks will still be being performed with human support, and
yes,
and humans are going to be needed in organizations to defend against
definitely.
It.
Definitely. And it's interesting because a lot of people are saying AI is going to take my job, AI is going to, you know, reduce the requirement for skilled cybersecurity people, and skills is a big challenge across the globe. In my view, I think AI will automate and will take away the repetitive, mundane, get me to the options faster. Mm. Like I use it daily to get me to the options faster, but I use my own thinking and my own context and my own skills to be able to judge which option to use.
Yes.
And so I think you're always going to need that level of sort of premium cybersecurity skills that really, you know, great skilled on top, and then it will make your great skilled labor more efficient.
Mm. While we're looking into the future, there have been some stunning advancements in quantum computing in the last little while. I think Microsoft has made some interesting announcements just in the last few weeks about the Majorama quantum chip, and of course the other companies that are making big advances in the space as well. What is the, I mean, assuming quantum computing becomes generally available to people, they're talking about in the 2030 sort of time frame, but we're talking about computers here that can process information that has taken classical computers years to do in a matter of minutes. Is this not going to lead to some sort of apocalypse in cybersecurity? Where are we heading with this stuff?
Look, I think I'm super excited by quantum computing. I think we can solve problems, you know, for humanity that we've never been able to solve before, which I think, and I think cyber practitioners are wary, and they're right to be wary, because I think there is threats that come with it. But I think, like with all new technology, my approach has always been to be proactive as a cyber practitioner in using it, understanding it, so that I can keep up and make sure that I'm on top of what's happening globally, so that I can protect an organization. And specifically with quantum, I want to talk about quantum and cryptography. So the way cybersecurity has worked forever is that we encrypt data, and encryption really renders data unreadable. So if it's stolen, an attacker can't gain access to that data because it's encrypted and it can't be read. And so we've really built a lot of cyber practices around the fact that we protect data using encryption. Now, with standard computers, the encryption that we use today would take millions of years to break. It's nearly impossible. So we consider it safe. What's going to happen with quantum computers is that, you know, we have more than the world's computing power on a single chip, and they are going to be able to break into the encryption systems that we've been using forever. And so there's a field called post-quantum cryptography that a lot of cyber practitioners are looking into. And what this field really does is looking at how do we build encryption systems that are resilient to quantum computers. And I often say to CISOs, there's three things in my mind that we all should be doing today. The first thing is we need to build an inventory of everywhere that we use cryptography, because standard cryptography is not going to be good enough. And we can't wait for, you know, 2030 or wherever that is to start building this inventory, because it's going to be a multi-year project to try and change systems, adapt the way we've worked for such a long time. So I really encourage people to start now. Build that inventory now of where you're using cryptography, where you're using encryption, and understand what your risk is. Then highlight your biggest areas of risk. So if this data was stolen, if this encryption was broken, this is my biggest areas of threat. And know that that's where you need to focus. Just that alone will give you a sense of purpose and direction for the next few years. The second thing I tell people to do is really keep close to what's happening globally. And a lot of vendors, Microsoft included, are coming out with quantum-resistant encryption algorithms. Now, these algorithms are sort of iteration one, mm-hmm. and they will evolve over time as quantum computing evolves. So I'm not going to say that those algorithms are the ones that will, you know, be the ones that you're using in 5 or 10 years' time. But cyber and IT teams keeping close to what's happening around cryptography and post-quantum cryptography is critical so that you can learn as we're learning, and you can adjust and adapt as we're adjusting and adapting. And then the third thing I always say to people is, unfortunately, many organizations still have hard-coded keys and, you know, things that are really difficult to change in systems. And I really promote crypto agility, which is basically being able to change cryptographic algorithms a lot easier, and being able to adapt your software to a mechanism that will allow you to change keys. Because what is good today may not be good tomorrow. So that agility becomes really important in the future as we work towards quantum computing.
Yeah, yeah. So the message is start looking at it now. Probably not time to panic yet.
Yeah.
But this technology is coming down the line. I suppose the fact that we're probably not going to have quantum computers on our desks anytime soon. I mean, these are going to be very expensive systems that have to kept in very cold conditions mean that you're going to have to rent time on them in a sort of a cloud computing type of model.
You'd
rent quantum computing in the Azure cloud, for example.
So
companies like Microsoft and other hyperscale cloud providers would have a great deal of control over how those quantum computing resources are used, at least initially.
Yes.
So that might help keep the bad guys away.
I think as things become a bit, and we can't predict the pace of technology evolution as well, because we assume that 5 years is the trajectory of the journey, and a lot of people are saying that it could be closer. And we also don't know what that world post-quantum computing looks like and what the speed we would be able to achieve then would be like. So we're basing all of our understanding of the world on historical compute power. And, quantum will fundamentally change that. So I think the biggest message is, yeah, exactly. Don't wait. Start now. Keep up to speed. Don't panic. No hysteria. Just make sure you have a concerted project and efforts to go forward as this technology evolves.
Particularly when it comes to encryption.
Particularly encryption, yeah.
Okay. Let's talk a bit about women in cybersecurity. I believe it's an American organization, and you founded the South African chapter. Southern African. Tell me a bit about the organization and why you decided to launch a local chapter.
So WSIS is a global organization that is backed by some of the biggest tech companies in the world. And their ambition is to promote gender diversity in cybersecurity. I founded Women in Cybersecurity Southern Africa, which services 11 African countries, Southern African countries, 3 years ago. And the main reason I founded it was because, I've spent 21 years in cybersecurity, I've seen the evolution of cybersecurity. When I started out in cybersecurity, there were very few females in cybersecurity. Today we have more, but on average across the globe, there's about 25% of females in cybersecurity. When you start looking at Africa, that number is significantly lower.
Oh, wow.
And when you look at senior leadership and deeply technical roles, the number's even lower. So, you know, we have a big challenge getting women up the rungs to senior leadership and getting them to understand that they can do deeply technical roles as well. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that was really the inspiration for starting it. And there's one specific conversation that actually sort of led me to go, I have to do something. I was sitting next to a young girl from a township school at a women's event, and she was saying to me, "I am so excited. I'm, you know, doing well in maths. I'm doing well in science, and I'm so excited. I really want to go into cybersecurity. I'm so glad I met you." All of these things, and then all of a sudden, her face drops, and I'm like, "So what happened?" And she's, "Well, you know, I really want to do this, but in my community, there's no encouragement for me to go beyond, you know, just high school or whatever it is." And so that, you know, that really shook me because I think it made me realize that we have to do something for the next generation. We can't sit back and not enable the next generation of women to realize that they could be cyber leaders, they could be cyber practitioners.
You think it's a societal problem where society actually discourages women from getting into this field?
Well, I mean, if you think about how, you know, going back to how girls and boys are brought up, right? Yeah. So, I mean, you buy a girl a doll, you buy a boy a computer or a race car or something that's right. engineering related. And I think that those sort of upbringing, the norms in society, the way parents, the opportunities that parents give to children, whether they're male or female, all of that builds into a little girl's thinking about what she's capable of doing. And I think that it's so important. One of the things we do at Rhesus quite a bit is we make sure that we really highlight role models that have done it because we really want those little girls out there to see the role models
yes.
that have managed to have great careers in cybersecurity so they understand it's possible. Mm. And I think that's, you know, one way of changing it. The other thing that we're really doing quite a bit of is building skills. And we've got such a great community. We've got a group of women that will give up an hour of their time and just, you know, set up a call and say, let me teach you about quantum. We actually have a quantum call going on in a few okay. weeks' time. You know, I know a little bit about quantum. Let me teach you about quantum. We've had someone that's done OT security a few months ago. And it's all community-led, right? It's women that have burnt their fingers, you know, earned the stripes and want to share back into the next generation. And that's what Rhesus is all about.
And do you go and speak to schools? And
we do. We also speak to, we were at an old age home a few months ago, towards actually the end of last year. So we speak to the people that are elderly as well, because I think there's, you know, there's so much of vulnerability in this, in the system. And attackers exploit these vulnerabilities. You know, human defenses aren't very great, especially with the very young and the very old.
Yeah.
And so we do try and get out as much as we can to to those communities as well.
Okay, excellent. Do you think women bring a different perspective to cybersecurity compared to men? And is that a benefit to organizations?
So for me, it's more about, it's for cybersecurity, I think that diversity is absolutely critical. And it's more than just gender diversity. It's all types of diversity. If you think about attackers, and you were actually saying this earlier, I mean, attackers sit all over the world, right? So they've got different perspectives, different backgrounds, different ideologies, different philosophies on life. And so if we have a very siloed view of the world in the teams that are defending against these attackers, we have far less ability to be successful in predicting what they're going to do, how they're going to react, how they're going to respond. And so I think diversity, specifically in cybersecurity, is hugely important because we face attackers that are diverse. Mm-hmm. And so that diversity is really critical. I think the challenge we have, and we've got such great male allies in technology and in cybersecurity. I am where I am because of great male allies. Let me tell you that. I think if I didn't have people push me into the roles that I wore, you know, I still remember before my first CISO role, one of my colleagues said to me, "Kirsty, you've got all the support from above and you've got all the support from below. What are you worried about?" You know? And just that ally just going, "You can do it, go ahead, we'll be here to support you," is absolutely critical. So I think that you know, I think there's a little bit more doubt in females when they take on cyber roles. So I think having good colleagues, good mentors and a good community like Rhesus to be able to give you that nudge. Because sometimes all you need is like a little kick to get out the door and try something new.
Yes.
And so I think that that's really important in, once again, bringing that diversity to cybersecurity, which I think, irrespective of gender or any sort of cultural norms, is super, super important for cyber as a field.
Does WSIS have a website that people can go and have a look
yes,
at?
Yes, they do.
What's the address?
WSIS.org, I think it is.
How do you spell that?
W-I-C-Y-S.
W-I-C-Y-S.org.
Yeah.
Good. Skills. Let's touch on skills now, which is allied to what we've just been talking about. We hear horror stories about the lack of skills in the cybersecurity space. Is it really as bad as some people make it out to be? I mean, is there a dire critical shortage of cybersecurity skills in South Africa? And if there is, how does the country deal with that?
Yeah, look, there is a dire shortage of skills. And I think we're getting some really great young talent in. We need to do more to promote that young talent to grow. I was actually reading a report from the CSIR that came out last year around the skills around cybersecurity. And it was saying something like, you know, the amount of people that spend more than 6 months with vacant cybersecurity roles is massive. It was more than 20%. So if you think about 20% of organizations spending half a year with unfilled critical cybersecurity roles, that means that job function is essentially not getting done, or perhaps they're outsourcing it, but, you know, with a spot fix mechanism. Mm. And this is really critical people that need to protect organizations where we're going for long periods of time with roles unfilled. So there is a dire challenge, but there's a lot of people that are doing a lot to bridge the gap. So Microsoft actually announced at our AI tour in January that we're going to upskill 1 million South Africans on AI and cybersecurity. And I think if you think about that, that's 1 in 63 South Africans or 64 South Africans. That's a huge amount of our population.
What does that actually entail?
So that's online skilling. Mm-hmm. It is our partners will take people in and we'll educate them on technical skills with AI and cybersecurity. So just
on the basics. This isn't as an attempt to get you into a career in cybersecurity.
No. So there's initial skilling. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of opportunity once you do something like this to be able to become an entrepreneur. So if you think about Africa, we've got such great entrepreneurial skills, right? I mean, if you think about the spaza shop on the corner, or you think about, we've got this entrepreneurial appetite within us. And I think if we can port people's understanding to technology, to understand AI, to understand cybersecurity, there's a lot of opportunity to start up something in Africa. And I think this is sort of like an incubator to get that thinking going. I don't think we should wait for, someone to give us a door open to allow us in. We should create our own opportunities. I think there's a lot of work being done in upskilling. There's lots of big corporates also have large graduate programs. And they take in graduates. I mean, in both the organizations I used to work at, we used to take in graduates every year. Mm-hmm. And it serves two purposes. The first purpose is obviously you've got fresh talent, young, hungry people that are eager coming into the industry, which is super energetic and you know, really changes the culture of of a team because they're so driven and passionate.
And new ideas as well.
New ideas, exactly. So we do it for that sense as well. But also because we know that because there's such a demand for senior skills, we have huge attrition at the senior level.
Yes.
And so we have to grow that pipeline. So I always encourage corporate South Africa, corporate Africa, to think about graduate programs to build that pipeline. Because it's too late once a senior person leaves for you to start thinking about getting a junior graduate to that senior level. You have to have some forethought and plan that out. Mm.
Do companies need to pay special attention to retaining skills in cybersecurity? And if so, how do you actually do that? How do you incentivize people to stay with an organization when the organization down the road is saying, hey, come work for me, I'll give you double your salary?
So I think there's different things that different cyber people find attractive. I mean, I was speaking to someone at a SOC recently, and all he wants to do is sit in a computer in a quiet room, and he wants to be able to go into systems and try and find weaknesses. That's basically all he wants to do, right? To keep him, all you need is a quiet room, a computer, and some good coffee, right?
Don't
disturb him too much. So I think that organizations need to understand the unique needs of their staff, especially of high-talented staff.
Yes.
And make sure that they're catering for it. Now, that need may be very different to someone else that's looking for a salary increase.
Yes.
He wants good coffee and a quiet room. Somebody else wants a salary. So I think it's actually that dynamic view of understanding what your employees want and being able to keep them. Mm. And I find too often many organizations use a broad brushstroke. You know, we'll increase your salary or we'll give you maybe a bit more flexibility or whatever it is. But really understanding what's important to that person, I think, is important.
Mm. What advice would you give to young people interested in a career in cybersecurity? Do you need to be, for example, talented at mathematics?
So, you know, cybersecurity is so broad. I've hired people that are ex-marketing. Okay. I've hired people that are ex-military. So, you know, someone that was a military commander planning actual...
I could understand the military one.
But I mean, marketing, for example. So I've hired a marketing person into my cybersecurity awareness team. And the reason I did that is because he understood how people think and how to get people to behave in a different way. And so those skills in getting people to not click a phishing email, hugely powerful. Mm. You take a normal tech person, good in maths and good in everything else, but they don't have that skills to be able to translate human behavior and get people to behave in a different way with, you know, material that we're putting out there to educate them. So I think because cybersecurity is so broad, there's an opportunity for everyone to come into cybersecurity. And what I'm also seeing, so for the young person out there, I think my advice would be go for it. I think there's so much of opportunity locally, globally. There's just so much of opportunity in cybersecurity. You'll never get bored because there's just so much to do. There's so many different focus areas within cybersecurity. And then even for people that are mid-career, I would say, don't underestimate the skills that you've built, like this marketing example. Mm-hmm. Don't underestimate the skills that you've built to be able to port your career into cybersecurity because it's so broad. And the advice I often give people that are looking for a job in cybersecurity is make sure that you're putting yourself front and forward. When you're applying for a job, make sure that you are tailoring your CV, your cover letter to your experience and how it adapts to cybersecurity. So the reason I picked up that CV from the marketing individual was because he wrote a cover letter that said, here's how I can benefit your awareness team. I understand how people think. Here's a campaign that I did in the past that changed human, you know, changed consumer behavior from this to that. So he made it real for me to understand how he could be of value to my team. And I think that is super powerful when you're trying to get into cybersecurity.
Okay. How do you think the performance of a CISO should be measured? How do you define a successful CISO? Is it an organization that hasn't suffered a cyber attack, or is it more complicated than that?
Look, I don't think there's any organization that hasn't suffered a cyber attack today. I think it's so pervasive.
Yeah.
Most organizations see multiple attacks a day. For me, I think boards judge and exco's judge cybersecurity leaders in different ways. But I think if I think back on my career and what I've been successful in doing and why I think I've always gotten different opportunities, is because I've been able to very clearly articulate the business concerns around cybersecurity as well as the business benefits. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I'll give you a practical example. Many people talk about implementing cybersecurity into development, and they talk about the risk reduction. So, you know, actually, you can reduce risk by 10% or get better code or whatever it is. And actually, if you think about what the business wants in developing code, they want to get a new product out really quickly. So if a CISO can go in and say, well, actually, I can increase your speed to market by 10%. I can help you get out, you know, compared to your competitors a little bit faster. You're talking the language of the organization, but you're building in cybersecurity and making it real for them and practical for them. And I think that you know, organizations are looking for CISOs that can do that. Mm-hmm. Tell me how I achieve my ambition as a CEO or as a CFO or as a CIO, but tell me how cybersecurity enables that ambition. And they don't have to be mutually exclusive. Like the example I gave, they can be very, very, commiserate to each other and work together towards achieving that objective.
Carissa Varma is a seasoned CISO and is now Chief Cybersecurity Advisor for Africa at Microsoft. Thank you so much for spending the time with Tech Central and Meet the CIO. And thank you for your insights. Very fascinating.
Thank you so much, Duncan.
Thank you.